This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
We got a busy hour, folks. We got the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up this hour. Will Gray, GolfChannel.com, is going to join us. We'll talk Masters. That gets underway tomorrow. It's supposed to be the par 3 contest today. They won't be doing that. Tiger had his champions dinner. It was what was on the menu, Ron? We had sushi. We had fine wines. We had a churro bar.
Prime rib.
Chicken fajitas. Flan. You went all out. Flan. That's right.
Flan.
Was flan on the menu?
Yeah, I'm not a big fan about
I'm not a big fan of that. I don't know. So that was Tiger's champion dinner. I'm glad they kept that tradition rolling along. That could have been postponed due to COVID. And then you don't get it back. Right? You don't get it back. If you're Tiger, you're like, wait a minute. I don't get a champion's dinner this year because of COVID. But then next year, when Bryson DeChambeau serves us barbecue, I'll be out of my champion's dinner because I won't be able to get it back. We can't have two champion's dinners, can we? So that was on the menu yesterday. In case you missed it, the NFL has got a new playoff plan just in case the entire season goes kaput due to COVID-19. So this is what is on the table for the NFL. So there is going to be a week 18 buffer in the schedule to make up for any postponed games. Okay, so that's the first step into dealing with cancellations of COVID. So you have this week 18, that's where we're going to be playing the makeup games. But let's say all hell breaks loose and everybody's losing a game or two, or a lot of people have lost two games or whatever, and it just doesn't feel right. The NFL is going to go from 14 teams in, 7 per conference, to 8 teams in and a 16-team schedule for the playoffs. That's the contingency plan that is going to be used. Now, don't get too hung up on this one, or don't get too used to this either, because this is only for COVID-19 situations. Once COVID-19 disappears from the public consciousness, whenever that is, we're going back to the 14-team playoffs. But it could be interesting if you're the New England Patriots, for example, and all of a sudden you're like, wait a minute, we might actually could be still in this thing. Or somebody else that is struggling right now. But they have to exhaust the Week 18 option before they go to the 16-team playoff schedule. So on the table first is making up games. Then we might go to 8 teams per conference. That was yesterday's vote by the NFL owners. Good for them. SportsMap Radio.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, before we get to the good, the bad, and the dumb, reminder that everyone's temperature varies throughout the day. It's important that you screen for fever in the morning and in the evening. Fever is a sign of COVID-19, so stay safe with the Exergen temporal scanner. All right, Mr. Culver, the good of the day on a Wednesday.
Bills Mafia.
Bills Mafia did a great job.
It's
excellent
a force
story.
To be reckoned with.
Excellent story.
If you haven't heard, the Bills Mafia banded together. Well, let's back it up a little bit. Saturday of last week, Josh Allen's grandmother passed away.
Right.
Then Josh Allen went out and performed awesome. I mean,
counted
I don't
for
know.
4 touchdowns.
Yeah, 400 plus yards against a good Seahawks team, a team many predict to be Super Bowl contenders.
That's right.
And so because of that, his grandmother passed away. They took charge and decided to start donating to a children's hospital in the amount of $17, which is Josh Allen's number. So far, since Sunday, they've already amassed over $200,000.
That's what I'm talking about, right? That you don't have to. You don't say, "Hey, donate as much as you can." You say, "Hey, look." To honor Josh Allen and his grandmother, donate $17. And if you are a Bills fan, it's inexpensive enough that you can afford it, even if you kind of had some troubling times. And it's something you are fear of missing out on, right? You want, as a Bills fan, you're like, yeah, of course, I want to join the chorus of my brothers and sisters in the Bills Mafia doing this. And you can raise a ton of money that way.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, it's funny because as much much grief that we give Bills Mafia for the amount of tables they ruin.
Right.
You know, then they go and do something like this, and it's like, oh, how are we going to make fun of you?
I think more charity drives or calls for charity should do things like this.
Yeah.
Where instead of saying donate what you can, because people are like, well, I can only afford $25 and that's not enough. But if you say right away, guys, it's $23 in honor of this number or this situation, yeah, or this, like if you put it in perspective, like all we're looking for is donate $17, like in this case, then people go, well, I can afford that. And I can say I contributed to this great Bills Mafia moment.
Now, maybe if you're going to donate to a charity that's maybe spearheaded by Cam Newton, maybe you want to up it.
Yeah, you do want to up it. Yeah, yeah. Don't necessarily go. Don't do a dollar, but find something else that Cam Newton has done remarkable in his life.
Or another equals, number.
Or another number. Or something else.
Yeah. But I mean, it's
like
same
maybe he threw 37 touchdowns one year and you go down that road, yeah, or something. I don't know.
Does that work though? Or are we just desensitized for, you know, less than a cup of coffee a day?
We are.
You could feed these starving kids in third world country.
Exactly. But I think there's a psychological aspect to it when people tell you it's like a lot of people can't afford $100 or $200.
And so they turned off immediately. I wouldn't do it.
You know what I mean? And then a lot of these drives, like you see them on GoFundMe where it's like they're like looking for $25,000 and you're like, I can only give $10. But if somebody tells you it's okay to give $10, in fact that's all they're really looking for, then it makes you go, well, awesome.
Yeah, honestly they didn't really have a goal set either.
Right. Yeah.
It was just
let's just see what happens.
Just in honor of Josh Allen's late grandmother.
That's great.
See what you can do.
That's awesome. And I bet that continues to – will that continue to climb or do they cut it off? Or
I think
it just continues to roll,
why
right?
Why would they stop it?
Why would they stop it?
That gravy train is going to keep on rolling. I mean, eventually it'll just fizzle out and the Children's Hospital's got to be happy with what they got.
Absolutely. That's great. But good for Bill's Mafia.
Yes. So. Weird for us to say. Usually they don't land in the good.
That's true. All right. What's the bad of the day?
The bad of the day, and I'm really worried about this, Tony.
Yes.
But 3 to 4 years from now – the Mets might actually be a good team.
This is according to Steve Cohen, right?
And not carry any of the issues that we've come to love.
I need them to be more Metsy. Yes. I don't want them to be less Metsy. I like them when they're Metsy.
Is that term going to be outdated soon? Yeah. Are we going to have to retire it?
Yeah.
Or are we going to be, or can we still use that verb, but we're going to be using it on other teams? Like, oh, the Marlins pulled such a Metsy thing.
Right. But now, then the Mets are comfortably leading the NL East, right?
Yes.
But we still use Metsy, I mean, in a way to remember the good old days.
He hasn't came out and said, yeah, I'm going to shop till I drop, but he isn't really opposed to that idea. That he's going to put the – I mean, listen, his first act as the Mets owner was brilliant. I mean, he got rid of everybody.
He got rid of everybody. That's what you got to do. Look, I always find it interesting, and it's not only business, but it does happen in sports a lot, where a new owner comes in, and initially right away they say things like, well, he's not expected to fire this guy, this guy, this guy. But what happens? Eventually he does.
Yes.
Because when you buy the team, you absolutely want your people in it. You don't, unless you're buying the Patriots and Bill Belichick as your coach, very few people in the sports world are safe when a new owner buys a team. Even if you're good at your job, he just wants to find somebody that's good as you are, but also his choice. He will always look at you as somebody he did not hire. And when you got billions in the bank, you want people that you hire to run whatever business you're in, including sports teams. So yeah, good for him. Everybody gone.
Yes.
Everybody out of here. Brody Wagonen, goodbye. See you later.
Yeah, we barely knew your last
barely
name.
Knew you. So, you know, I mean,
but this is, I don't know if I'm comfortable with the new look Mets. I mean,
I like how he said that the Mets will act like a major market team. That's an absolute shot at the previous owners who did not treat it as a, like, you're in the number one market in the world. Even if you're the second team in the city,
yeah.
And again, we talk about this all the time with the Mets. It's not like the Lakers, like where the Lakers own the city and then the Clippers get some residue. The Mets have a fan base of Dodger and Giant fans who don't like the Yankees. There is a good portion of the New York metropolitan area that does not like the Yankees.
Yes.
And so that's why they're Mets fans. They're Mets fans because their fathers, maybe their fathers before them, who cried when the Giants left, cried when the Dodgers left, grabbed onto this Mets team in 1962 because they were never going to root for the Yankees, ever. And so he's got that, and yet the previous ownership went, we don't, yeah, but we're like the Tampa Bay Rays. Like, we don't have any money. Like, we don't doing anything. Like, what are you talking about?
I don't, they're so just good for him. They're just sitting on piles of cash. I mean,
right, they are.
You just sit there and go, New York is in our first name. And that's right. All you need.
That's all you need.
And you can do anything you want.
Exactly. Good for him.
And why wouldn't any great player want to go to that market? Because that only enhances their visibility.
Of course.
Unless you're someone like Mike Trout, who's like, no, I'm fine in Anaheim.
Now, I gotta say, the Mets were in the World Series 5 years ago.
They were.
You know, I don't want to rip them too much.
Yes, but since then, they've given us plenty.
They acted like it was a flash in the pan, right? I mean, they just went there and then goodbye. They haven't won a World Series since 86. I mean, give me a break.
I know.
I mean, they were there in 2000 with the Yankees. And then,
I can't really complain about that.
That's true. You know, but you just got one.
We just got one, so we're okay. And we've been to a bunch. We just couldn't win it. But finally, we did.
Absolutely. All right, what's the dumb of the day?
Bear with me here.
Okay.
Pharmaceutical company Eli Lilly has received emergency approval from the FDA for its monoclonal antibody treatment for coronavirus.
Okay. I don't know what that means, but go ahead.
They pretty much, Eli Lilly is being fast-tracked because they have an antibody that's very effective against coronavirus.
Is this a vaccine? Is this similar to what Pfizer has?
Yes. Okay. Yes, it's similar to that.
I literally know nothing about this industry, so I'm going to ask questions like I'm five.
No, that's fine.
Okay.
And you might be wondering, why do I have a drug that could cure all in the dumb of the day?
Right. Yeah, that sounds good.
It's the name of the drug.
What's the name of the drug?
I'm going to butcher this, but bamlanivimab.
Can we shorten that to something awesome?
I have so many questions that no one can answer. Like, why this name? Why can't we call, hey, superpower drug?
Yeah.
Why bamlanivimab?
Or dynamite vitamin.
Right.
Or something like that, like in a bubblegum tasting gummy.
Something that just rolls off the tongue.
Yeah, like Flintstone vitamins.
I mean, obviously, this is the, you know, the pharmaceutical name. They'll have like a generic name that we'll call it, that we'll come to love, like, you know, Tylenol or something like that.
Sure.
But the drug is, it's bamlanivimab.
Again, I'm going to ask like it's bamlanivimab. I'm going to act like I'm five. Where do these names come from?
Good question.
Like, when I get a prescription, and every time I get a prescription, I look and it's like a Scrabble Grand Champion word, right? It's like, this thing has 23 consonants and 5 vowels. And I think to myself, where does it come from? Like, why are we naming things that are 27 letters long?
Yeah, exactly.
Like when you create a drug and you settle in and you go, okay, what is this? Why isn't it simplistic? And there's a good reason for it, I'm sure. Again, I know nothing about this.
Yeah. I mean, this drug is great. I mean, it's shown to reduce COVID-19 related hospitalization or emergency room visits in patients. So, I mean, this is progressive stuff. This is what we've been looking for.
Right, sure.
All this time. And all this time, they finally just came up with the name bamlanivimab. See, I'm already butchering. Bamlanivimab.
It better not be confused with another bamlanivimab so that you get the wrong drug.
Right.
You know what I mean? You know what I mean?
But I mean, if this is where names are going, we're in trouble.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Because what do? You just add more letters to it, right?
Yeah, just keep adding letters until nobody can pronounce it at all.
That's why it's dumb, because we just come up with an easy name for us.
I mean, are we close to this thing being like vaccinated? That company and Pfizer and.
See, this is the way I always look at it. I always look at, like, you know, movies like I Am Legend.
Yeah.
Right. Remember what was the whole beginning part of that movie is that they found a miracle drug that cured cancer. And I think it was fast tracked through the FDA. They didn't do all the necessary tests or they didn't wait long enough. And so everyone took this miracle drug that cured cancer. And what happened? Well, the people who took the drug turned into these mindless zombies.
Right.
That were super fast, superhuman strength. They just couldn't be in sunlight. or daylight, whatever, right?
So
I always think that that's what's happening.
Yeah, with okay.
That, yeah. You know, they keep testing and testing and testing to make sure that there's no side effect that creates zombies.
Do you think they joke about that in testing? Like, well, no zombies
probably.
Today.
I hope
the
so.
The rats didn't turn on each other with fangs and claws. Yeah. Any vampire rabbits since we injected them last week, Bob? Anything like that? You think they joke about that?
I know.
They probably do. To just break up the monotony of looking in microscopes and petri dishes all day?
They gotta, you know, maybe they have like little bunny foo-foo sitting over there in the corner that they test these things. And like, Hey, look, you know, he's not bunicula yet.
Exactly, right?
He's still white and fluffy and he looks peaceful.
Hey, Bob, come over here for a second. I may not have found the cure for coronavirus, but I've got the cure for you being annoying. Just little jokes like that, I think, would break up the monotony of what they do.
You got to.
Right?
You got to.
Oh, that's funny. I heard that Tuesday. Right?
I had a friend when I lived in San Diego who was a pharmacist who made drugs. And, you know, I mean, he was cool. But I remember he got together with a group of his buddies. And I was like, these are the people you hang out with? Man, this is sad. I'm like, I'm not trying to be judgmental. I feel like I can get along with anybody, but I could not get along with one person.
Yeah, I know.
I looked around. I'm like, God. But I will say this. He always made the best chocolate chip cookies.
I'm sure he did.
They were measured to the letter of whatever ingredient he was putting in.
That's what they say baking is all about. Perfect measurements.
Yep.
If you're accurate with that kind of thing, you can be a good baker.
It was like, you can bake anytime. His wife was like, right. I let him do all the baking because he
fantastic.
Gets it perfect every Great. Single time.
All right, that's the All right, that is the good, the bad, and the dumb as we continue along. It's Wake Up Call. Hey, Will Gray, golfchannel.com is joining us in 15 minutes. We'll talk about the Masters. We'll touch a little bit on that next as we continue with Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue with Wake Up Call. Again, we will, Will Gray, I'm sorry, why did I just froze on that young man's name. He's a good guest when we have him on for golf.
It's no Bam Lanavidmab.
No, it's definitely not. Need replacement parts of tools for your repair, maintenance, or restoration project? O'Reilly Auto Parts has you covered. Trust the friendly, knowledgeable parts professionals at O'Reilly Auto Parts. They know what it takes to get the job done right the first time. In fact, professional technicians have counted on O'Reilly Auto Parts for years. So stop by, talk to one of the professional parts people today. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. So we'll talk to Will Gray about the Masters, but yesterday, did you see John Rahm's shot on the 16th
hole?
Yeah,
I'm still trying to figure it out.
Like somebody on Twitter, after I posted it and said this was the greatest golf shot in the history of the sport, and somebody told me, somebody said this looks like an illusion, like it was kind of altered, like not Photoshopped, but you know, whatever it is they do.
I showed it to my wife and she's like, is that real?
Yeah,
and
that's
I'm like,
right.
Yeah, no, and I said, and he meant to do that.
Yes, exactly.
He purposefully meant to skip it across the water, like, you know, I mean, I don't know about the draining it in the cup on the one shot, but still.
So, but here's the thing about Rahm. Like, okay, so for those of you who haven't seen the video, John Rahm hits, it's on the 16th hole at Augusta, which has got a pond in front of it. It's a par three. It's got a pond in front of it. And what he did was he skipped the ball over the water. So he hit a very low running shot that had enough spin that it skipped. Then it landed on the green on the far right side of the green. And then as it rolled along, it caught the huge slope that green has that funnels to the left. It's gigantic. It's a big sweeping left-hand break. It caught that and then funneled its way to the cup. Now, a couple of things to understand. That pin placement that he hit to is a traditional Sunday pin placement that guys, when they go up to the shot, will try to hit to the right side of the green. So it does funnel to the left down to the cup. You've probably seen a number of shots in championship golf on Sunday where guys get it close by hitting it exactly in that right place. Jack Nicklaus in 86 did the exact same thing. But what Rahm was doing was he was trying to get the ball to skip across the pond to land in that area, and then let's see what happens. And it went into the hole. I mean, it looks amazing. It's more impressive even in a practice round goofing off where luck played more of a part in it than anything else, then Tiger's chip in at that same hole. And Tiger's chip in at that same hole back in 2005 where the ball hung on the edge, the Nike logo hung on the edge before dropping in. Tiger tried to make that. Like Tiger knew if I hit it up here, it'll funnel down and go into the cup. That's what I was talking about with the Sunday pin placement. That's what it does. But this is insane because he's skipping it across the water first.
Yeah.
Then getting it to roll a true roll to the cup.
So here's my question to you. And you said that's a traditional Sunday placement.
Yeah.
He's somewhere in the running.
Does right? he try it again?
Does he try it?
Yeah. Right.
Do you have that in the back of your mind going, you know, that video went viral. I watched it a couple hundred times. I still can't believe I did it, but I did it.
Yeah, exactly. Now, if you gave him a bucket of golf balls after that shot and said, do it again, how many shots would it take for him to do it again?
Oh, man, that's funny.
1,000?
Is
that a once in a, like literally an impossible shot that was made possible?
I think I'd try it again, though.
I would, too.
I think I do.
I would have done it right then and there. I would have said, give me another ball. I'm going to try this again. If I get this in again, but I got to try this one more time. So that was crazy. Because this is what these guys do in practice rounds, man. They just goof off.
They just have fun. You're working. You're trying to figure out everything, but at the same time, you know from sitting at that tee box, I can get it on the green.
Exactly.
That's not a question of whether or not I can get it on the green.
You know, we're going to ask Will Gray this question, but when you qualify for the Masters, once you qualify for the Masters, whether it's Phil Mickelson who gets to go for the rest of his life, or a guy like Rory McIlroy who doesn't get the champion's exemption, but because he's one of the top players in the world and is a major champion winner, he knows he's gonna get an invite. Once you know you're invited, you can go to the course anytime it's open and play, anytime. And you hear stories about this all the time, about guys are like, well, I'm taking this week off, but I'm going to Augusta for a few days to practice, and then I'm going home. And you hear this all the time because they jump on their private jets and they fly to Augusta. They go play, like, they spend the night, they play a couple of rounds a day, and then they leave. A number of these guys have gone to that golf course in the fall. It's usually closed in the summertime. So when people talk about the weather being different, and this is, all of the different, the way the course is in autumn rather than spring, a lot of these guys know what it's like in the fall because they've been there. Because they're like, what am I going to do? It's towards the end of the season. Maybe I'm out of the FedEx Cup playoffs. Or maybe, whatever. I'll go to Augusta. Some of them, when they go to East Lake for the Tour Championship, maybe they'll stop by Augusta and play around real quick. And then they'll go to East Lake if they're a Masters champion. It's kind of a nice perk when you think about it, right? You just go to Augusta anytime. It's like being a member without being a member.
Yeah, you don't have to pay the dues.
Right. Like if you're Mickelson, better yet, Jordan Spieth. Because Jordan Spieth won it when he was like 21.
Right.
Right.
It hasn't really done much since.
Right. Exactly. So Jordan Spieth won. And then at that moment when he's putting on the green jacket, he's like, I can come here for the rest of my life anytime I want. I can't bring a guest. Now, you can't bring your buddies, but you can go anytime you want when the course is open. See, practice for the Masters.
Isn't that funny thing? Like Jordan Spieth, if Jordan Spieth and Ricky Fowler were somewhere in Atlanta. And there's like, hey, let's go hit a round.
Right.
Jordan can't suggest Augusta because Ricky Fowler can't go.
Yeah, if Ricky Fowler isn't qualified to go, he can't go. Like if he's not on the list of exempted players that are going to make it to the Masters, he can't go. But if he is, these guys plan this. Phil used to talk about that because Phil likes to humble brag about his jet and stuff. Like he used to say that. Yeah. Right. Yeah. He used to drop things like, well, we were on our way to Florida and I stopped at Augusta for 2 days. And he didn't even just say why he stopped in Augusta for 2 days.
But there's a great Waffle House there, I've heard. Right.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I wanted to go to the Hooters that was across the street from the golf course.
I wanted to go to John Daly's stomping grounds.
All right, Will Gray will give us a preview of the more serious note instead of the silliness of us. A more serious note, Will Gray will give us a preview of the Masters coming up next. It is Wake Up Call, the Sports Map Radio Network.
listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
We are on the eve of the Masters starting Thursday at Augusta National. Progressive guest line. Progressive making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Will Gray, golfchannel.com, helping us preview the last major of 2020. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well, Tony. Good to be with you.
John Rahm shot. We got to start with that. What was that? How do you guys who seen everything put that into perspective?
Yeah, this is it's not as unique as it maybe appears. This is something that guys do every year on Tuesday during the tournament when they're playing practice rounds. Kind of a way to loosen up a little bit before the pressure cooker really kicks in on Thursday. It makes a little more sense when you're surrounded by hundreds of patrons in the galleries around that hole, but. I know Vijay Singh made an ace skipping it across the water, I think, in 2009 or so. So John Rahm is not the first to do this. He's certainly not the first to hit that shot. Usually Tuesday is the day where everyone goes through in their practice rounds. They hit their shots in the green, then they step up to the edge of that pond and they try and skip it across, obviously with varying degrees of success. But John Rahm, that's his second ace this week. It was his birthday yesterday. It is a big week already for the Spaniard. We haven't even hit shot counts yet.
Yeah, amazing. Absolutely amazing. So let's get to the tournament. Let's start with the course in the fall. Is it much different? Is it slightly different? We're talking November here in Georgia. It's still going to look green and lush and fun. But what are the challenging weather conditions in the fall compared to when we get this in April?
Yeah, I think I would classify it as slightly different. There were thoughts that it could be very different when this first, the thought of a November Masters first came up. But I think that the fact that it's unseasonably warm, you're not getting the really chilly temperatures this week that you could have had in mid-November in Augusta. The grasses are going to be different. They have, I don't want to go deep in the weeds here, but they've got some different grasses on the course right now than they do in the spring. And I think the other thing you have to watch is the rain. It's going to have a little bit of extra moisture. I know today the forecast is a little wet, especially tomorrow. It looks like it could be the wettest day of the week. So it's always a long course. It's going to play a little bit longer for these guys, especially the first couple rounds. And just what they do on and around the greens, I think that they're having to maintain the course a little bit differently than they do in April. From a viewing perspective, it's going to look like Augusta National. It's going to look like the Masters. But there are some slight intricacies that the players have already picked up on that they say, all right, this is going to be a little bit of a different test than we're used to having in April.
And don't most of these guys, especially the ones who have qualified already or know they're going, haven't they played this course a couple of times in the fall when it is open?
Potentially, it depends on when you qualify. I mean, if you win a tournament in January, you qualify for that April, then you don't
right,
get
true.
Play in the fall. I think that this definitely could play in the hands of especially the past champions, guys like Tiger, Phil, Zach Johnson, Bubba Watson. Those guys have all talked already this week about, yeah, I've come back here in October, November, and I've seen the course kind of in these conditions. You have to remember, Augusta National does things the inverse of what you would expect your local club to do. They close in the summer. No one plays Augusta National from about Memorial Day to Labor Day. They reopen around October, and then they run through the winter. So it's a very short season. There's not a ton of opportunity to see the course in different conditions, but I do think that some of the past champions have seen it in November and seen it in these conditions more so than the 60 or 70 other guys that are potentially seeing it for the first time this week.
All right, Tiger Woods is the defending champ, and I know for a lot of people 2020 has been so long, it feels like 1,000 years ago when he won that thing, but he is the defending champion. But his game is a lot different going into this Masters than it was where he won the Tour Championship heading into the offseason. What's his game like today, and does he have a chance given his experience around that course?
I'm never going to count out Tiger when it comes to Augusta National. Certainly we learned that last year. I do think that it's more of a long shot this week than it was a year ago. Last year in the spring, I know it feels like it was 6 years ago, as you said, but yeah. He was really playing well. He had coming off a couple of really good finishes in the majors at the end of 2018. Right now, we really just haven't seen it. He has not finished better than 37th in any tournament since the tour returned in June. You have to go back to January to see a top 10 finish. It's not quite there right now. He talks about, maybe I can get the pieces to come together, getting back on a course where he definitely has a bit of a local knowledge advantage and a course advantage, but he's going to really need a lot of pieces to fall into place. The putter has to cooperate. The driver has to straighten out. There's a lot of things that need to fall right for Tiger. It helps it's a smaller field. You're only talking about 92 guys versus maybe 140 or 150 in some of the other majors. But I think that the chances of a repeat this week are a little slim.
We asked this about a couple of other majors, the absence of the fans, or in this case, the patrons. And, you know, guys could have errant shots sort of blocked a bit by a crowd. That's going to be not in the case in this major as well. At Augusta, is that a big deal? Is it a big deal to sort of have that wall of people if you overshoot a green, for example?
Yeah, potentially. I think that the impact is going to be more auditory, like the things that guys hear. I remember Tiger spoke yesterday. The roars you hear around that course are unlike any other, and I think that the feel and the ambiance of this event will be more impacted by the lack of fans than any other tournament except the Ryder Cup. Tiger said yesterday, you can stand on the putting green, which is next to the first tee, and you can hear a birdie or an eagle roar down in the valley on 13. It's, you know, several hundred yards away. You can hear it standing there, and you know exactly what it is. You know exactly what it means. You're not going to have that this week, and it's so much, especially when you get onto the back nine. You're used to kind of feeling that adrenaline, and you're hearing the crescendo, both for good shots and for bad shots. It's going to be very different, especially for the guys that have played this for the last 10, 15, 20 years that are used to hearing the cadence of those sounds. So, yes, there are some shots around there where, you know, the ball is going to bounce a little further into the trees now than potentially it would have otherwise, but I think the biggest key is going to be the lack of noise around that course.
That's a great point, because I can remember stories of guys talking, especially like in the 80s, where they would be on the 15th and they'd be negotiating between a club to get in to get to the green in two, hear a roar, not necessarily seeing what it would be on the board, but knowing what it was behind them, and then changing clubs and changing their thought process. That happens more there than anywhere else.
Oh, absolutely. And you can hear there's absolutely a difference between a birdie roar at Augusta and an eagle roar at Augusta. So the guys can calibrate accordingly. And you have to remember, this is an old school tournament. There are no electric scoreboards. So you've got the manual scoreboard operation. So there are a ton of those big white scoreboards around the course, but they take a few minutes to get scores changed by the people that are working them. So you do have a few minutes there, especially coming down the stretch, where you can't rely on updated scoring to really know where you are. And that's when it can become key to really, you know, use your senses and kind of listen and remember who's in the group ahead of you, who's in the group behind you, and what that noise potentially means.
There's nothing more fun when you see it on TV where a crowd will watch a green and they'll see a guy putt out after a roar was heard, and then everybody turns their head to the scoreboard to see what happens, and then they roar at that point from that hole, even though they didn't see what was actually going down.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there are so many things about this tournament that are unique to the Masters that you don't see anywhere else, and that's part of the lore. That's what makes this so special, is coming back to the same course and having all of these, you know, not crazy traditions, but certainly unique and just things that you don't see anywhere else. It's part of the fun.
All right, let's get to Bryson DeChambeau, because that's the big story coming in. How much will he dominate this course in terms of his length? What do we know about his ability to drive certain areas? Augusta is a chipping and putting tournament as well. What do you feel about Bryson's game and how much he'll overpower this place?
I think he's going to try. I certainly think he's going to hit his fair share of moon balls. We've already seen some, you know, some returns from the practice rounds where he's having wedge in for his second shot on some of the par five. He's hitting it over the trees in the left of 13. He's hitting it into 14 fairway off of 13, all sorts of crazy angles that were never at all intended by the course designers. But you mentioned it. You hit it right on the head. This is a chipping and putting tournament, and Bryson historically has not putted well on these greens. He's one of the worst putters among players that have played a bunch of rounds in the last 5 or 6 years. And part of that is because at Augusta, you can't use these green reading books that have become so popular on the PGA Tour. He can't break it down like he wants to with his vectors. It's a lot more about feel on and around those greens. So, yes, I fully expect him to launch it. He's talked now. He won't commit one way or another about, is he going to use a 48-inch driver this week, which is the longest possible allowed under the rules of golf. And he talks about he could hit it, you know, 400 yards on the fly. We'll see if he tries to trot that out this week. Maybe he's saving it for next April, for the next Masters. But I do think that if Bryson's going to win or contend, he's going to need a good week on the greens, which is what he had at Wingfoot at the U.S. Open, and it's what he's going to need this week, too.
All right, what about the state of some of the games, of some of the names we have talked about before at this tournament? The state of Rory McIlroy is going for the career Grand Slam, Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka coming off both the knee and hip injury. And also, and I know he's being talked about more in the negative game aspect, Jordan Spieth. Where have you seen some of those guys?
We'll work backwards there. I mean, Jordan Spieth, saw some prayers to Jordan Spieth. I am among many who are loving the notion that Jordan Spieth might someday return to his former glory. I don't expect it to be this week. Certainly, he has an aura about him at this course where he's able to pull a lot of magic out, and maybe that could happen, but there is no reason to think right now that coming into this week that he's really shown anything to indicate that he can contend. Dustin Johnson coming off a T2 last week at the Houston Open, you could argue he maybe should have won that tournament. So he is playing with a lot of momentum, was a runner-up last year. I think he's definitely deserving to be among the top two or three favorites. Brooks Koepka is a big question mark. As you said, he was injured. He missed the U.S. Open. He did play well last week in Houston, shot 65-65 over the weekend. So he's trending in the right direction, and we all know how well he plays in majors when he suits up for him. So I would expect him to be right there. And then Rory is, you know, in a Bryson-less world, maybe Rory going for the Grand Slam would be the biggest storyline. But we're all talking about Bryson. Certainly if Rory gets into contention heading into the weekend, that's going to magnify a lot. But you haven't really seen a ton out of Rory over the last 3 or 4 months. He, you know, has some off-course stuff. He's become a father about 2 months ago, so he's been, you know, dealing with daddy duties as well as trying to hone his game. So it's understandable trying to find that balance. But if we get to the weekend and Rory's on the board, that's going to become a big storyline.
Well, always good talking to you, my friend. Hope to catch up with you soon. I know it's been a wild season for the golf and the scheduling and COVID and all that. Really good. Really appreciate your work all season long on these tournaments.
All right. Good talking to you.
You got it. Will Gregg, golfchannel.com on the Masters. Progressive is proud to honor our veterans by donating cars to move their lives forward, especially in times of need. Learn more about their Keys to Progress program and plans for 2020 at keystoprogress.com. So that was Will Gregg talking about the Masters. Hey, I've recently discovered the life-changing benefits of CBD, and even better, CBD with no THC from the great line of products from Infinite CBD. Freezing Point cooling creams help me manage the making muscles, and they're tasty yet relaxing veggie gummies. Infinite CBD's line of products, 0% THC, non-intoxicating. That makes it ideal for people that are seeking the benefits of cannabinoids without the mind-altering effects of medical marijuana. CBD is non-toxic and can help you better manage your pain, discomfort, and stress levels. Infinite CBD's hemp is organically grown in Colorado. All of their products are expertly formulated by master chemists to provide all the benefits without the worry. Text WAKE UP to 511-511. You can save 20% off your order. Plus, orders over $20 receive a free 1,000 milligram strawberry banana dropper at $53 value. All you got to do is text WAKE UP to 511-511. They're also going to give you free shipping on orders of over $99. You can go to their website, infinitecbd.com. Use the promo code WAKE UP to start improving your quality of life today. These products and statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration and are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease or illness. Message and data rates may apply. Text STOP to unsubscribe. It's Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, this hour of Wake Up Call presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need a mortgage to fit your life? Rocket can. NFL Thursday night, Tennessee and Indianapolis. If it doesn't get called off for COVID. AFC South battle. Is there such a thing as an AFC South battle? Can we call this an AFC South battle?
Well, with these two teams, I guess it is. I guess the other two aren't competitive at all.
It seems like it seems between these two teams is more of like it. Like it's not Baltimore Pittsburgh, right?
No,
or Kansas City Raiders, Chiefs Raiders.
This is
it's Titans Colts. It's like a friendly get together.
Well, this is one of those where it's a heated rivalry,
right?
Once every 6-7 years,
right? Yeah, when they're both happen to be good when Houston stinks,
right?
That's about it. By the way, remember when I told you I'm so mad right now? I'm mad at Phil Mickelson right now.
I would be too.
This just happened. Remember when I told you that I sent Mickelson the data from one of my 3-wood shots that I was being funny with?
Yeah, that cute
on
photo.
Twitter. Yeah, and he wrote cute.
Cute.
Right? Some other guy just did that, and his response was cute.
Oh,
so I tweeted back to him. I said, Phil, that response belongs to me.
That was my line.
That was mine. I thought we had a moment. Me and Phil Mickelson. You gotta be kidding me. You don't go use that to everybody who posts their numbers. Yeah, you can't be doing that.
Crack open a thesaurus, my friend.
I know. That's what I should tell him. Crack open a thesaurus. You're a smart guy. You went to Arizona State.
Yes. Well,
smart, is that a smart school?
I don't know. I don't think so.
I mean, Tiger Woods went to Stanford.
Yeah, that's a smart school.
Yeah, right?
Arizona State is known for other assets.
Don't be tweeting. You know, if I better be careful, because I don't want to end up like what Jake Asman did with LeBron James. I don't want to get blocked by Phil.
Yeah, you don't
want to
get blocked by Phil. But no. You could respond to him. What? You couldn't throw out a bam line of mid-mob?
That's true. Adam, I could have done that.
Come on. Come on, Phil.
Phil, don't respond. Everybody that sends you these fun, like, look at what I did with my numbers thing, because he gets a bunch of those. Don't respond to every one of them with cute. That you did that for me. Let's keep it that way. Come up with I don't care what else you come up with. How about awesome? How about way to go? How about I'm going to encourage you to continue to play golf as you get older? How about things like that? Cute, save for me. You know, that's what I get.
If you don't have time to write all those letters out, like you were saying, that's awesome. That's a lot of letters. You can write neat.
You can write neat. That's a great – actually, that's – can I – I'm going to send them. Say, how about neat?
Yeah, how about neat?
How about neat? How about neat for the next person that does this?
I don't want you to push it any further than you have to.
No, that's true, because I don't want to end up getting blown.
You don't want to be Jake.
I don't want to be Jake. Jake – LeBron is never going to see any of Jake's tweets at him again, ever.
And you don't want that.
You don't want that. I don't want that with Phil. I'm like stalker host now with Phil Mickelson.
Who wouldn't be?
Speaking of Jake Asman, he's coming up next.
Dream of calves all day long.
That's right. And coffee for wellness. Jake Asman show next.